Welcome to the Paleo View. I'm Stacey Toth of PaleoParents.com. You might also know me as the broth lady or the inventor of the hashtag more vegetables than a vegetarian. I'm the co-author of several paleo cookbooks, including Eat Like a Dinosaur, Beyond Bacon, Real Life Paleo. I like to talk about health at any size and self-love and personal acceptance. Specifically, I have a love for lifting heavy things. If you're interested in finding more out about that, you can also find me on Strong Woman Radio.
And I'm Dr. Sarah Valentine of thepaleomom.com. I'm the New York Times best-selling author of The Paleo Approach and The Paleo Approach Cookbook. I'm passionate about nutrient density and the intersection of diet and lifestyle with health, which really means I just love talking about science.
News and Views, where Sarah and I catch up and you get to listen to our gossip. Hi, Sarah.
Hello. How are you?
I am sunburned and exhausted. How are you?
There was enough sun to get sunburned?
Yes.
It poured rain here most of the day.
It was beautiful skies, no rain all weekend. It was amazing. We went away for the weekend to Pennsylvania, which is about 3 hours from where we are, to a lake that we stay at annually. We have posts on our blog about what we call glamping, because it's not quite camping when you're in a shelter with a bathroom, but it's as rustic as we get. And we had a great time. The kids had a great time. And we were on the water a lot, doing a lot of water things. And I just think...
The reflection off the water.
Yeah. And I only put on once because I was like, oh, it's the end of summer. Like, it'll be fine. And I'm usually really, really good about... making sure that I am protected, and just got away from me a little bit, I think, with the deception of it being fall, but it's really not. It's really August.
So my kids have been back to school for 3 weeks. So like it's fall for us for sure. I mean, the leaves are starting to fall off the trees. Like that's one of the things that, you know, I actually really like about Atlanta is that like every season is about a month earlier than you would think it is. And we have four really distinct seasons, and like it starts cooling down in August. And then, you know, by September you're like, yeah, it's fall. But we had sort of a rainy weekend and it kind of forced us indoors. And so we ended up using the time to do some major like spring cleaning type jobs. We defrosted the garage freezer, which is not a small task. And I found some really interesting stuff in there too. And then we also did a bunch of like tidying up. We went through all of the board games and like made a pile for Goodwill of all the ones that are like really too young for our kids. And like, my husband and I aren't going to play like Memory, Mickey Mouse. So
it depends on how many margaritas you've had, though.
I mean, still think that there's more sophisticated games, even with a lot of margaritas. But so we did a lot of jobs like that around the house. And, you know, there was my, fish tank stand had some water damage, not from the aquarium that's on it, but from, a jug of water that had been put in the bottom shelf that had apparently leaked a gallon of water. Cause apparently sometimes when you buy jugs of water at the store, they have holes in the bottom. And who knew you had to pay attention to that sort of thing? And so having like a 200-pound, like, aquarium on a stand that, you know, has water damage made me feel uncomfortable. So we, you know, it's not an easy thing to move a fish tank. It's just, they're heavy. They slosh. There's live creatures in them. So we did a lot of jobs like that this weekend. And, I feel really accomplished because of it. Like, it's just like, okay, you know, there's these cleaning jobs. And I think in part because when I was working on the Paleo Approach and the Paleo Approach cookbook, I did zero of the normal, like, see a corner and kind of tidy it up. Like that's the type of thing that I would normally do, you know, maybe like once a month, you know, every few weeks, like be like, oh, I haven't organized this in a while and kind of organize a corner. And I kind of stopped doing that when I was writing the Paleo Approach and the Paleo Approach cookbook, so much so that like it took us months of going through the house to sort of catch up on all of the clutter that had accumulated over that time. So it feels really good to me that I'm like working on two books again. Yes, I know that's crazy, but that I'm I feel more on top of those kinds of things. Like, I feel, like I was saying to my husband, like, have you noticed how super mom I am these days? Like, super mom. Like, I'm so patient, and I'm finding all these creative ways to, like, handle whining, and, like, my kids are responding really well, and I'm getting all this quality time with the kids. I'm like, it's all because I'm writing books with them at school. Like, it's such a different thing. I really should have waited until my kids were school-aged before writing two books. But, like, it has so much more time than having kids at home or kids in preschool. Like, it's a completely different thing, and I'm really fond of it. Very, very fond of it.
Meanwhile, I am having the opposite reaction. I simply bought Wesley new shoes today for kindergarten, which he starts in 2 weeks, and had to fight back tears at the idea of him going to school.
Okay, well, so don't get me wrong. I cried like every morning for the first week after drop-off. Totally. But then I got home, and I was like, wee, I'm in the house by myself. And I would like flitter like a fairy.
So I think the feelings that you're having are exactly what we were trying to capture with the Reset and Thrive library. Did you end up using any of the printable tools to help you kind of like make a list and get organized? Because that would have been
epic. instead of let's just wing it like this. I have to admit that I didn't, but I have been like, my time has been so crunched, but I've been like, when I have a few moments, I've been like going through, because there's so many books in that bundle that I've never seen, I've never read, because there's so much new stuff, which is why the Reset and Thrive library is so exciting, because like, people aren't going to have these books. Like, you look at other bundles and someone will be like, you know, I already own 4 out of the 5 books I would want out of this. And the Reset and Thrive, because it's so new. Like, you know, everyone, that's the big feedback I'm getting, is like, everyone's so excited because it's all stuff that they haven't seen before, but like, they know the authors, they know the blogs that they're coming from, they know these are going to be really great resources. And so the excitement's like really high. But so I will, like, in my spare time, I will like scan through something and be like, wow, this is really good. And I'm seeing a lot of recipes I want to try. I think that's one of the big things that's happening for me.
Yeah. Have you checked out, so not to discredit any of the other cookbook authors, because I love them all, but when I was putting together the exclusive meal plan for the bundle, I obviously had to go through pretty thoroughly and look at all of the different e-cookbooks in order to come up with a cohesive meal plan that had like varying proteins and could use leftovers, or you could cook a whole chicken and then like I made a second meal out of leftover chicken, right? So like all of these things are how I come up with meal plans, and in order to do that I had to like know the full breadth of recipes that were in all of these different books in order for people to get a taste of each one as they were cooking their way through the meal plan. And I took a particular obsession to the Salads Without Grains book. Have you?
I haven't looked through that one. I've been really excited about Paleo in a Pinch. That's been the one that I've been
looking. Okay, so I love Sarah, and Paleo in a Pinch is amazing. I think maybe because my expectation was that it would just be amazing, because I love Sarah.
Right.
I was like,
it's true.
Yes, this book is awesome. I love
Sarah,
this book.
Shout out.
Yes, Primal Bites.
That came with a really goofy hand gesture, by the way, which no one can see, but I just totally dorked out right there.
Fist bump. But so I think maybe I had low expectation for a book about salads without grains, because I was like, well, duh. I mean, salads shouldn't have grains. But then I looked at all the recipes, and they are amazing, because I'm a huge fan of salad. And I know that you're a little more low-key with how you like to eat your raw vegetables, but I'm a sucker for salads.
I really do like my raw veggies plain. I really do sit, and this is, I know people don't get it, and I'm sorry, I can't explain it, but I really do enjoy just sitting and eating an entire head of lettuce with nothing on it.
So
mixed in it.
I do understand though that you know that you're in the minority with this.
I do. Yes. I realize this is a weirdo thing to do. But I'm just going with it because it's kind of a healthy thing to do. So, you know, why not?
So anyway, what I really liked about that book is that it had really inventive combinations of different foods to eat on salads. And I was like, duh, that sounds amazing. I need to try that. And also it had like different varying proteins that she prepares in different ways. And then like salad dressings that sound incredibly good. I love poppy seeds. And it hadn't occurred to me that I could make my own poppy seed dressing. And so there was a recipe in there for that. And I immediately was like flagging things and sending them to Matt. And I'm like, we need to cook like this entire, well, not cook. You need to prepare this entire, but not everything in it needs to be cooked, which is even better. So yeah, that was the one that, I don't want to pick favorites, but that was one of the ones that blew me away. And then I told you last week, Caitlin's program, which in and of itself is valued at almost $300. The fact that she was so generous as to include the entire program in the bundle of library resources kind of blew me away. So those are the two that, like, you know, I just am.
Can I tell you one that I'm really excited about?
Yeah, tell me.
That I'm going to do. I think I'm going to do.
Do it. Are you going to do summer's program?
Oh.
No. Okay. Go ahead. I was predicting, but I predicted wrong.
No. Okay. Well, now I want to make you guess.
I can't. No,
it's not going to. I want to do Nicole's gratitude workbook.
Yes.
Yes. It's a 30-day interactive journal. And like, I want to do it. Like it seems to, like, it's such an important mindset thing. And I feel like it would be just really good for my mental health to go through it. Like I think it's such a neat thing. And I think it's one of those, right? There's a lot of lifestyle factors, right? There's all the ones we talk about all the time, right? Stress management, sleep, activity, and like circadian rhythms, right? Living in sync with the light dark cycle. But there's all these other things that really go sort of they're underrated. They're not talked about as much, and they're still really important, like community and connection, gratitude, mindset, right? And those types of things are still so fundamental, not just for mental health, but for physical health. So what I love about this is there's actually scientific studies showing that gratitude journaling or gratitude meditation improves health markers like inflammation. And so I'm like, I think I want to try that. I think that's just a really cool new resource that I don't think, right? Is it launching with this book?
I think it launched about a week or two before the e-library.
It's brand new.
And there are actually resources that are only available as part of the Reset and Thrive bundle right now, like your sleep book. And I think there's maybe like 10 total. I could probably go look up the list, but that are only available that people either wrote just in time to be included in the library, or that have kind of set aside these resources that they were saving for something, and then they ended up deciding generously that that something was going to be the library. Because one of the things that we talked about before is that one of the requirements that I had for all of the items that are included is that they not have been ever sold or bundled in something that someone would have bought previously, except if someone had like gone out and bought the gratitude workbook. Like, it's not entirely new content, but it is never been kind of bundled or anything like that before. So my hope is that, like you were saying, it's great to get that feedback that people are excited that this is a lot of new content that they're seeing, or we didn't want it to be so cookbook focused, because I know a lot of people have recipes, and we have free recipes on the website. So there's a lot of lifestyle things to kind of help people find health from a different perspective in terms of lifestyle factors, as you noted, as well as organizational measures, which can really help people de-stress, which is something that I went through a couple of months ago. I think I talked about it on the podcast about hiring organizational people and really decluttering the house. And I felt like such a release from that it was part of what inspired the take on this library. So I'm glad to hear you having that feedback. And I too am like making my way through fully reading all of these resources. I mean, obviously I look at them before in order to kind of make sure that they are, something that we want to stand behind and put together.
Looking at them and sort of quality controlling them versus like the detail that's using them is a different thing. Yeah.
Exactly.
I get it.
Yeah. The Summer's Body Remix is another one that I would highly recommend. I know a lot of people are inspired by kind of my body positivity and that approach to, you know, self-respecting yourself is self-loving yourself. Summer is definitely a kindred spirit with that. So if that message resonates with you, her program is included in this e-library, and that's a really great resource too. So anyway, we have an actual topic today, right? I feel like yes. We don't need to ramble
so,
about...
Because we totally hadn't intended on talking about this, but clearly we were both excited, so we ended up talking about it.
Yeah.
But since we did talk about it, we should mention to people that when this show goes live, the Reset and Thrive Library will only be on sale for a couple more days. It ends Monday. And after that, it's never going to happen again, correct?
Correct.
So this is the thing with bundles. The reason why they work is because they're one-time offers and they're only offered for a short period of time. And that's where you get that magical balance of amazing, you know, resource for a ridiculous discount for the consumer while still providing enough benefit for all of the people who've, you know, contributed their hard work to this bundle for free. So they get some benefit only when it's these short, exciting things. Otherwise, it devalues everybody's hard work, and that doesn't help anybody. So it's only available for a few more days, and you can link in the show notes either on paleoparents.com or on thepaleomom.com and go check it out and see if it's a good fit for you.
Yeah, the other ebook that I just thought about and I really want to mention is Jennifer from Predominantly Paleo wrote a kid-friendly, family-friendly paleo cookbook to help get your kids interested in the kitchen, which is a topic question that we get all the time on this podcast about how to get your kids excited and eating healthy foods. So just so you're aware, that debuted in this library, and I don't know that she's going to sell it outside of the library. She is toying with the idea of doing some different things with a similar topic and not actually, you know, furthering this ebook. So if that's something that you're interested in, I would definitely check that out as well. I would be remiss to mention that. And I feel really badly that I'm not mentioning all the other ones, but like you said,
yeah, I was going to say, like, you're starting to mention so many.
Yeah. We just got to move on.
You have to cut it off because there's going to be a lot of hurt feelings here.
I'm sorry, everybody else. I love all of you. So, I'm really excited about this week's show topic, and I want to try to incorporate it into a little bit of an experience that I had this weekend.
Excellent. Do you want to share what the topic is first, and then the experience, or you want to like make
I think it'll just come. I think the topic will become obvious as I tell you the story.
Okay, so you're gonna make people guess. Excellent.
So we were glamping this weekend, as I mentioned, and we prepare all of our food beforehand. So we either bring food that we plan to cook there or we pre-cook something. So like for snacks, we made zucchini bread and we made muffins that are obviously paleo friendly. So that the boys, if they're like, you know, they got off the boat and it's going to be an hour before dinner and they are rolling around on the floor telling me that they're starving and going to die if they don't eat something, because that happens, they have something that they can snack on. So we felt like we had really splurged in preparing paleo chocolate chip cookies and then gotten some marshmallows to make s'mores that way. Like instead of gluten-free graham crackers and chocolate, which is
chocolate
what we normally...
Chocolate cookies
right?
with roasted marshmallow.
Right.
That sounds, that sounds amazing.
It was an amazing, it was a splurge, and we did that Friday night. And the kids were totally happy. Like, not a single person was like, I wish I had a graham cracker. Because, frankly, the gluten-free graham crackers that we get are not that good. Like, the chocolate chip cookies was a better experience, in my opinion. So, everybody was happy with that. No problem, whatever. We, Saturday, have dinner. And we have Matt cooks an amazing, like, steak on the grill dinner. And I come out from, like, bringing the food in, and my dad says that he's going to walk up to the marina area to get the kids ice cream. And I'm rubbing my face as I'm telling this story because I'm, like, thinking back to what's happened as a result. So we walk up to the marina, and, like, honestly, ice cream is one of those things that I let the kids splurge on. Like, it doesn't have any gluten in it, and usually if we get just, like, regular ice cream, they get something like chocolate or vanilla. It doesn't have any food dyes. It just has like regular sugar. And it's not like the worst thing in the world for my voice. It's not paleo, but it's like one of those things that we spend our 20% on. So we all walk up and the ice cream thing is broken. And what they have instead is these like frozen ice cream cones that they're selling that are pre-made that obviously the boys are choosing not to have and that I would not permit them to have, which has like a gluten cone, or Philadelphia water ice is what it's called. And I thought it
What
was.
is Philadelphia water
Exactly. So
ice?
this is where I'm going. Okay, so I think that it's like snow cone. That's what I think. I think that it's going to be a snow cone. And I think that the boys, because they have chosen root beer, I think that they are going to not have like this brightly colored anything, and it'll be fine because it's just going to be like this nasty corn syrup stuff, which is awful, but that it's just going to be like on ice, and then they're mostly going to be consuming ice. So they order it and it comes out, and it's like the consistency of Play-Doh. I've never seen anything in it in my life. And I don't know like what these people in Philadelphia, they probably love it, and you know, good on ya, but I don't know what it is. So I go up to the counter and I say to the lady, like, what is in this that's making the consistency be like Play-Doh? And she's like, oh, it's just ice and some stuff that we flavor the ice with. And I can tell we're in Backwoods, Pennsylvania. Like, we're in the mountains. These people are not like ingredient label readers. And at this point, my father's already purchased it. And like,
yeah, but what makes Play-Doh consistency is wheat flour.
Yes, exactly. So I just was like, made a terrible parenting choice and was like, all right, whatever. You already have it. Like, you know, go for it. So today, I woke up and Cole had been in the restroom for like 90 minutes.
Aww, poor
and
Cole.
Was like, I have a terrible tummy ache. I have a terrible, terrible tummy ache. And, I was like, okay, I'm sorry. I'll get you some water. Like, you know, what can I get you? And then throughout the rest of the day, the other boys had tummy aches as well. And so immediately I look it up because I think as you think, like, oh, I was right. There was gluten in this stupid ice, like water is what they called it, water ice. And I, you know, I'm a terrible mom, blah, 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 blah. So I go to the website and I look up the ingredients, which is what I should have done yesterday. And there wasn't gluten in it, but there was like three different kinds of sugar as the first ingredient. And high fructose corn syrup was like the number one and most prevalent. And then it was like corn syrup and then another kind of syrup. And then there was xanthan gum and guar gum, which is must have been how they get it to be like
really last. It must have had a lot. Well, corn syrup will give it a kind of that.
So,
extra too.
But like high fructose corn syrup is one of those foods that's on our list, like gluten. And usually for snow cones, I've looked at those ingredients before. It's just corn syrup. It's not high fructose corn syrup. And I'm not asking for anybody to make a judgment over what's better or not better. I'm just telling you, these are the choices that my family makes when we splurge, and everybody has to draw the line where they are or are not comfortable. But the reason that I'm telling this story is because my children had a reaction to this food similar to a reaction that they would have had with gluten. And there was no gluten in the food that they were consuming. And the thing that made them sick was a form of sugar. And so it's interesting to me that not just do I see a huge difference in them behaviorally, but I also saw that all of them got stomach aches from eating this food. And it wasn't anything else because Matt and I didn't get a stomach ache. You know, we all ate the rest of the same foods together. And so, like, I know that it was that food that they ate that made them sick. And being able to look at the ingredients, like, I was genuinely surprised that there wasn't gluten in it because of the reaction that they were having. And it was just simply a matter of, like, the degree to which there was so much sugar and junk in it that caused them to be sick. So I'm excited that we're talking about sugar today, because I think it's interesting. It will be helpful for people to understand the different types of sugar and why some sugars are paleo and some sugars aren't, or depending on what camp you come from, no sugars are paleo or blah, 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 blah. And you and I have talked before about the different kind of sweeteners that our families consume, but having a general show about sugar seemed a good topic for me because I like just witnessed all of my kids get super sick off of it, which is something that even after 5 years, I wasn't anticipating. So always learning.
Yeah. Not cool.
No, it wasn't cool.
No, I mean, yeah, no, it sounds awful. So I'm sorry. I'm sorry the kids will have to go through that. Hopefully they're all better by tomorrow morning.
They're feeling better now.
All right. Yeah. So, you know, we get a lot of questions about sugar. Sugar's a really contentious issue in the paleo community. And I think that, you know, it's pretty clear from our websites that both you and I fall in this sort of moderate sort of middle ground of like, look, we're humans. Sweet stuff tastes great. It's clearly not good for us daily. Clearly, some sources of sweet flavor are better than others. But like once in a while, like, come on, guys, let's all calm down. And it's fine. And I think that within the paleo community, you sort of see that I consider kind of the middle ground. And then there's the like, as long as I used almond flour, it's paleo and I'm going to have at it. Right. There's that sort of extreme. And I think that's an extreme that a lot of new to paleo people, they come into paleo wanting to not give up their favorite foods and finding ways to replicate them and finding ways to sort of continue that dysfunctional relationship with food. And I think that's fine. I think that's part of the journey for a lot of people, right? A lot of people, that's the trade that you make, right? You're giving up something else, but you're not going to give up your, you know, donut. You're just going to make it with, you know, almond and coconut flour now instead. And once you've kind of mastered that, then you'll start tackling those treats. So like, I really don't think that, you know, needing paleo treats as a transitional food is a problem. I think it's only a problem when the long-term goal is not to reduce the quantity of those and to, you know, slowly cut down the amount of sweeteners that are in there. Like, you know, I think as long as there's this recognition that those aren't the best choices, and that working towards choosing them less frequently is a good move. Like, I think it's fine. Like, we're all human. We're human. And when you're coming from the standard American diet, you're coming from very addictive food. And it's very, very challenging to retrain your hormones and retrain your taste buds and retrain your digestion, right? To get to the place where, you know, all of these crazy nutrient-dense paleo foods are actually enjoyable. And I think that, you know, if you listen back on old podcasts and we talk about how organ meat was disgusting and, you know, all of those things. And now we talk about how, I mean, I had organ meat 3 times today, actually.
That's hardcore.
That was hardcore. That was unusual. But yeah, that happened. But, and it was three different things. I don't know how that happened. It was just stuff that was in my freezer. I was like, this stew that has chicken liver, like, blended into the sauce is really, really delicious. And, you know, here's some 50-50-50 burgers and here's some Eunice Wellness Meats head cheese, right? It was kind of like that. So,
So I just kind of want to add to what you were saying in that, this idea of, like two paleo camps, like, yes, you eat sweeteners or no, you don't eat sweeteners. I mean, I specifically addressed this a lot when we were doing book tour and we recapped it at that time, but what I hear often from people, and the reason that we wrote Three Phase Paleo, which turned into Real Life Paleo and outlined kind of 3 steps for people to follow, and really kind of drawing the line at phase 1 being your baseline of where I recommend that people not cross, because that's delving into foods that will be really hurtful to you, high fructose corn syrup being on that list. So I broke my own rules this weekend and we paid the price, right? But the reason that we do that is because we hear, or at least I hear from so many people that say that they do challenges and that at the end of the challenge, they fall off the wagon because, like you said, standard American food is so addictive that as soon as the challenge is over, they tell themselves for that whole 3 to 4 week period of time, I'm just not going to eat these foods for a couple of weeks and I can have them on such and such date. I can have them on such and such date. And then that date arrives and they go buck wild and they eat a bunch of crap and then they feel awful, but their body immediately becomes addicted to it again. And they get in this snowball cycle of not being able to stop eating that food, even though they say, like, I'm going to do this challenge, then I'm going to enjoy these foods that I didn't while I was in the challenge. And then I'm going to go moderate paleo. Like, that's what we hear from people.
Yeah.
And
it's like we're rewarding ourselves for making it through the challenge, right, with these things that completely derail.
And it's so similar to me to yo-yo dieting. Like, I don't see a difference between this, like, starvation diet, Weight Watcher approach, where then, you know, you make your small victory goal or whatever it is, and then you're like, okay, well, it's my birthday or it's a holiday or I made my goal, I'm going to celebrate with food. And then you overindulge and you have a really difficult time. Then your body like rebounds and you gain a bunch of weight back. And then you have to go back on a diet and then you're off a diet, off again. Like, I see the way people are treating these paleo challenges very similarly. And, you know, we call this a lifestyle because even though it is technically a diet, any way of eating, no matter what way you eat, is technically termed a diet. We call this a lifestyle because we don't want to see people yo-yo dieting. We don't want to see people suffering. We don't want to see people or hear from so many people like we do that they do a challenge and then at the end of it, they go on this binge and they lose control. And so the reason that, at least I'll speak for myself, the reason that we have a lot of, you know, paleo-friendly type treats is because, especially for families who, you know, are exposed to all of these kinds of things on a regular basis when you go to parties and, you know, whatever, the alternative to making a paleo-friendly brownie and not eating, like, gluten and refined sugar is your body responds to it differently. And no, it's still a treat. It's still, you know, something that is not a daily consumption recommendation, but it is a much better alternative to what the original food is. And both your body and your mind, your brain will respond completely different from the chemical reaction that happens inside as opposed to a refined sugar treat. So I just, that's about the, you know, depth of the of the science that I can start for you. I don't know what your intended science discussion is, but I just think it's really important because, Sarah, we heard from people so often that that's exactly what happens to them. You know, like, yeah, their face lights up when I'm like, well, did you do this? And then you rebounded and then you went face first into a donut. And they're like, yes. And then I'm like, okay, well, here's where we need to draw the line. Like, donuts are addictive. They have gluten and sugar in them. So,
yeah. So why don't we get into a little bit of that in more detail in some science?
Woohoo!
Next segment is Science with Sarah, where I take a moment to explain the details and the whys.
Science. So one of the things that happens when we're talking about sugar is, you know, if you're going to accept that a little bit of sugar once in a while is going to be okay and it's not going to derail your efforts, then there's a huge range of things with which to choose. And there's, you know, different communities that you come from into the paleo community will come with some bias, right? So you'll come with perhaps, you know, an understanding that high fructose corn syrup is not a healthy sugar. And maybe you'll come from a place where, you know, you always use a certain, you know, sweetener in your beverages, right? Maybe you use Splenda for baking. Maybe you only, you know, believe in honey. Maybe you're super against cane sugar, right? We see all of these different opinions come in. When we start to look at the science of how these different sweet compounds impact the human body, we start to see some really thematic elements. So, you know, this is all information that is available in detail in my book, The Paleo Approach, and also in a number of blog posts on my blog, and we can make sure that we're linking to those in the show notes. But, you know, the main classes of sugars would come as sort of cane sugar-like sugars, so sugars that are mostly sucrose, fructose-based sugars, so things like high fructose corn syrup, but like agave nectar would also fall under that category. Sugar alcohols, so those are things like sorbitol, mannitol, erythritol, which is a really popular paleo sweetener that you see in a lot of recipes, or xylitol. Then you would get non-nutritive sweeteners, which I think the paleo community is pretty savvy to the health detriments of. So that would be things like, you know, aspartame, right? That's, I think we all pretty well understand that those are not healthful sugars. There's a whole range of sugars that are based on sweet fibers, like inulin fiber. So that would include things like coconut sugar, maybe, and I'll get to that, or chicory root sugar, for example. And then there's things like stevia leaf. And then there's a few other, like monk fruit. There's a few other fruits, leaves that have unusual other compounds in them. They're often sort of plant hormone compounds that have a sweet taste, but that are not metabolized as sugar by our bodies. And then there's right the really processed, refined chemicals that you might see, right, dextrose or something like that, that is a man-made isolated monosaccharide that you might find in prepackaged, you know, industrially produced, manufactured foods. So when you look at all of these things, there's some themes. So non-nutritive sweeteners like aspartame, they negatively impact your brain chemistry. They negatively impact your gut your sort of hunger hormones. They negatively impact your gut barrier function. Things like sugar alcohols cause a leaky gut. Like they directly impact how the cells that line your gut are bonding with each other. So it directly impacts how tight those bonds are and how easy it is to keep for them to keep what's supposed to be inside the gut and not let it come into the body. And sugar alcohols also negatively impact the gut microbiome. So they have a tendency to feed the type of bacteria that we don't want growing that high, like E. coli, for example, in the gut microbiome. When you look at fructose-based sugars, so, you know, people think high fructose corn syrup is clearly, you know, the evil, but this also includes some other sweeteners that we might see in paleo recipes, like yacon syrup or coconut sugar, coconut nectar, palm sugar, palm nectar, agave. Agave can have higher fructose content. It's typically between 70 and 90% fructose. High fructose corn syrup is usually 60% fructose. Like it's more fructose than high fructose corn syrup. And yet we still see it permeating through paleo recipes. Yet fructose in high quantities and low quantities, like what you would find if you just, you know, ate an apple, is treated by the body completely differently. But when you have it as this isolated free fructose molecule in large quantities, it is inflammatory. It causes gut dysbiosis, again, the wrong type of bacteria growing in the gut. It really negatively impacts hormones, and it directly impacts cardiovascular disease risk factors like triglycerides. And there's a huge, you know, group of scientists who really think that fructose and the fact that there's high fructose in like the sweetened beverages that have become such a common part of the standard American diet, that that is one of the major culprits behind obesity, diabetes, cardiovascular disease, metabolic syndrome, like that, that, you know, group of chronic illnesses that are becoming so rampant. Sucrose, like regular sugar, is the type of sugar our bodies really actually know what to do with in small quantities. So sucrose is made up of a glucose molecule and a fructose molecule. And fructose in small quantities is treated very, very differently compared to fructose in large quantities. Fructose in small quantities can do some really beneficial things, like help glycogen repletion in your muscles after a workout. Glucose is one of you know, the main energy molecules that our bodies can use. And so sucrose itself, we have machinery to handle that. Sucrose is something that we find in nature in fruit, along with free fructose and free glucose. But, you know, the main sugar in most fruit is sucrose. And provided that the quantity doesn't sort of overwhelm our machinery, we know what to do with that. What happens when you're eating a lot of it and then we do overwhelm our machinery is that's when you get things like insulin resistance, leptin resistance, right? Then it starts to disrupt hormones. Then it starts to negatively impact the health of the gut, right? Then it starts to be inflammatory. But in small quantities, our bodies know what to do with it. And our bodies know what to do with it better than all of these fake substitutes. And so one of the things is you start going through a list of sugar substitutes, you see negative health impacts. One of the things that goes sort of beyond that is the fact that when our bodies sense that we are eating something sweet. And this, there seems to be responders and non-responders for this. So this doesn't happen in every person. I'm pretty sure it happens in me though. When I taste something sweet, my brain goes, aha, we're going to be digesting sugar pretty soon. And for a, you know, large group of people, our pancreas will secrete insulin ahead of that blood sugar, of that sugar hitting our bloodstream. And so if we actually eat sucrose, that's great. We've got the insulin there to deal with it. If we eat something like stevia, we don't have the increased blood sugar to deal with it. And high insulin in the blood is itself inflammatory. And so then you have this blood sugar crash because the insulin's in your blood and it, you know, very effectively shuttles whatever glucose is in there into your cells. And that decreases energy. It's a stressor on the body. It can affect the adrenal glands and it can make you hungry. And so there's this really interesting amount of research now showing that non-nutritive sweeteners, a lot of this work is done in aspartame, actually increases hunger. And part of that is because of cephalic phase insulin release. And part of that is because of the research in aspartame. Anyways, aspartame has a direct effect on some hunger hormones in the stomach and small intestine. So what you end up finding is that people on average, when they're consuming non-nutritive sweeteners, make up for the sugar that they weren't consuming with added calories throughout the day. So we know what to do with sugar. So why is sugar so bad? It really comes down to two things. One is quantity of sugar that we're eating. So too much overwhelms that machinery and how to process it, right? It's just too much energy and we can't deal with all that energy all at once and we need to store it. And storing it is a sort of, it uses resources, right? We, our bodies use resources in order to do that chemistry to put sugar into long-term storage. And when we talk about resources that the human body uses, that's micronutrients, that's vitamins and minerals. And so it can actually deplete our bodies from really important micronutrients to be processing a lot of sugar, things like calcium, things like magnesium. The other aspect is when we have a diet that's really rich in refined sugars, that's a diet that's not rich in micronutrients. And then you have all of the other problems, which we've talked about on the show many times, of micronutrient deficiency. And we know that certain micronutrient deficiencies can impact how our bodies respond to sugar. So we know, for example, that minerals like chromium is really important how our bodies respond to sugar. Magnesium and calcium is really important how our bodies respond to sugar. So there's a variety of minerals that and vitamins that we need in order to be able to have that healthful response to a moderate amount of sugar. So when it comes to choosing sugars, you know, for me, I think the number one thing is quantity. It's not actually which sugar you're using, as long as it's a real sugar, so like a sucrose based sugar. So cane sugar, like a cane sugar, something like maple syrup, honey. I mean, those are all sucrose. And well, you know, with a little bit of free fructose, a bit of free glucose, honey is probably the most variable. So some honey can be quite high fructose, other honey can be quite high glucose, and it's most honey that you would buy, you know, if you're buying local raw honey, is not going to come with an analysis. But if your farmer says this one's really good for diabetics, buy the other one. So what is now within those? To me, it's the trace minerals they contain. So there's these micronutrients that are inherent in those sweeteners. And at least then you're getting some of the nutrients required to process them correctly. So it's the main thing is just keep the amount small, keep it as an occasional treat, right? There should not be sugar in your coffee every morning. That is not going to be a healthful thing. But an occasional, you know, paleo-fied chocolate chip cookie, provided you're not sensitive to any of the ingredients in there, provided you're not diabetic, that's not going to hurt. That, you know, that's going to be a really essential quality of life moment that's going to help propel all of the other healthy changes that you're making. So looking at cane sugar, because I think that's a really contentious issue for people, the less refined it is, the more nutrients it has. So if you can get like an evaporated cane juice, a muscovado or a Barbados sugar, something something like jaggery, which is an unrefined cane sugar product. Those have vitamin A plant form, so it's not the useful, most useful form we can get. They have vitamins B1, B2, B3, B5, B6, calcium, iron, magnesium, zinc, copper, chromium, phosphorus, manganese, sodium, and potassium. And yes, I did have that written down in front of me. I do not have that memorized, just so people know. Molasses is probably the most mineral-rich sugar that we can use because it's a byproduct of the refinement of white sugar. So it's like concentrating all of the stuff that's taken out of white sugar. So it has all of those minerals I just mentioned. It also is a really good source of selenium, phosphorus. I already mentioned phosphorus. It has all of those vitamins and minerals, it just concentrated. And it's one of like the highest food sources of chromium, for example. So it's a very mineral rich sugar. And if you're sticking with something like blackstrap molasses, it's actually also not as sweet. White sugar, brown sugar, turbinado sugar, raw sugar, sugar in the raw, those really don't have any vitamin and mineral content. And I would recommend against using them because from a chemistry perspective, evaporated cane juice does the exact same thing. And so you've got this much more mineral rich alternative. Unless, you know, it's like a wedding cake and you want the frosting to be white. In that case, you know, it's a wedding cake. Like hypothetically, you're only going to get married once. So like, fine. Maple syrup has a really substantial amount of manganese and zinc, but not much else in it. Honey does have quite a lot of vitamins and minerals, and it also has some other neat properties. I think we were talking about it a few podcasts ago where it's antimicrobial. So it's got some other neat things, but it has, again, vitamin A, vitamins B1, B6, and B12. It actually has a little vitamin C. It has a little bit of vitamin D. It has vitamin E. It has B9. I forgot B9. It has calcium, sodium, phosphorus, magnesium, silicon, which is an interesting one that we actually need in small quantities, iron, manganese, and copper. So it does have some other vitamins. So when it comes to, you know, choosing a sugar, quantity is the number one thing. Vitamin and mineral content, even though it's trace, is the other thing. And then what you're eating it with, because when you consume sugar with things like fiber, with things like protein, with things like fat, it changes how our bodies respond to it. And so that's another really important thing to consider if you're going to have a treat is, you know, making sure that treat is maybe dessert after a meal. So you have the rest of your meal to kind of moderate it and change how the body responds to that sugar. You know, and then also, then you're talking about synergistic nutrients and you're going to increase nutrient absorption. So those things are always very, very helpful. Did I cover sugar in enough detail?
Yeah, I think it would be interesting if you could talk a little bit about why specifically coconut sugar and palm sugar were recommended, because you kind of mentioned them unless I'm.
Oh yeah, I did. I promised I'd come back to it and I never did.
Yeah.
You're right. So here's the very interesting thing about coconut/palm sugar/nectar. There is no scientific analysis of the sugar content. So there are some proprietary analyses where you don't actually get to see it, but there's reports. And there's some that show that it has pretty much the same sugar content as cane sugar. And then it does have some interesting vitamins and minerals in it because it's an unrefined sugar. And then there's other analyses showing that it's, you know, it's a low glycemic index sugar because it's 82% inulin fiber. So depending on which one of those is actually correct, I have a different opinion about the sugar. So the problem with inulin fiber-based sugars, so coconut or palm sugar, if that's actually the case, chicory root sugar is another really good example that's predominantly inulin fiber, is that inulin fiber is a high fructose fiber. So our bodies can only partially digest it. We do break it up fructose molecules from it, and it's extremely highly fermentable. And we know from scientific studies that have used inulin fiber as a prebiotic supplement that that's really overfeeding certain species of bacteria. And anytime where you are, you feeding one specific type of fiber to your gut bacteria. I talked about that on the blog last week with my resistant starch blog post. But a lot of this work comes from the inulin fiber supplementation work. You are overtly manipulating your really sensitive system. And what we know of the gut microbiome is the most important thing is variety, right? The most important thing is a huge diversity of different types of microorganisms growing in there. And when you selectively feed one type of food, you're selectively feeding one type of bacteria, and even an overgrowth of, you know, bifidobacterium, something that is, has, you know, probiotic and has lots of benefits, an overgrowth of that is still not beneficial. An overgrowth is still going to reduce overall diversity of the gut microbiome. It's going to suppress the growth of other types of bacteria. So if coconut slash palm sugar slash nectar is really predominantly inulin fiber, that causes me concern, because you're starting to really talk about something that's going to overtly manipulate the gut microbiome. And that may be why some people experience gastrointestinal symptoms with coconut sugar. If it's actually the similar type of sugar breakdown as cane sugar with some minerals, then I think it's just a matter of taste, right? A matter of taste and a matter of, you know, how easy it is to source, you know, organic cane sugar versus, you know, ethically produced coconut sugar. So in that case, then I think it's just preference. And so because that science is not there, and it, you know, that definitive measurement of what types of sugars and coconut sugars are, to me, I also personally really don't like the taste of coconut sugar. So I don't use it, because I don't really know what's in it. And that makes me feel really uncomfortable. Like, it's either something that's relatively benign in small quantities or something that I don't want to mess with. Like, it's one of those two things. So for me, you know, especially when there's other alternatives that I like better, I just do better safe than sorry. Better. What is that phrase? Better safe than sorry. That's
yeah.
It.
I really like dates as a sweetener as my first option whenever we're
super, super micronutrient rich.
Yep.
And lots of fiber.
And lots of fiber. I mean, people will say, like, when we make recipes where we're using something like 10 dates in an entire batch of cookies, it's like, that's a lot of sugar. I'm like, are we talking about the same thing? Because that's like one date.
I posted a recipe that was 10 dates and it made 12 muffins.
Yeah.
And I got angry sugar people. And I was like, I think you and I are just have a different philosophy about sugar. And, you know, I'm making a muffin for my kids that also, by the way, had like 8 eggs in it or something, right? Like, I felt confident with my choice is, I think, my response.
Yes.
So, I mean, before we go to questions, like, let's talk a little bit about that, because there is the other extreme of the community, which is really anti-sugar, right? Really anti, if it looks like a cookie, it's not paleo. If it looks like a pancake, it's not paleo. And it's this very militant view. And when you look at, like, you know, Dr. Cordain's original, you know, the paleo diet, like, one of the things he talks about is the 80-20 rule. And I don't know that he meant the 20% to be Oreo cookies. I'm pretty sure he didn't. I'm fairly confident he didn't.
I think you have to, like, use a weighted scale. That's how I approach it, right? So, like, I think of anything not nutrient dense as part of that 20%.
Yeah.
So those paleo chocolate chip cookies that I made were still contributing to the 20%, but they were contributing at a lower percentage than the high fructose corn syrup ice cream that the boys ended up eating, which pretty much consumed the entirety of anything non-paleo they can eat for, like, the rest of the week, where we will focus on nutrient dense foods to help their body recover and heal. So I think it's like, you know, some people say the 20% is just one day a week they take completely off.
Yeah.
So
some people have 3 cheat meals a week, right? And they're planned and it's like whatever they want. And I mean, some people, it is like pizza and Ben and Jerry's, like, it's way off the reservation. And that, if that works for you, awesome. It would wreck me for 6 months. So I don't do that. But there's this, I think there's this perception within the paleo community that there's these two sides of it. So one is there's, if we're posting paleo versions of treats, we are somehow endorsing frequent high consumption of those treats. And I think that you and I both talk about these being occasional indulgences all the time. But there's this sort of tacit endorsement thing happening. Then there's this, right, this whole other community who just, who I think because of that perception, they find the idea of, I mean, not even if you, you don't even have to label the recipe as, you know, a paleo friendly chocolate chip cookie. It's the fact that it's on the Paleo Parents website or the Paleo Mom website that they find that it's somehow offensive because it doesn't conform to their very, very rigid definition of paleo. And I feel like that's worth addressing here because you and I do see, you know, angry comments from this very sort of militant approach to paleo, this, you know, and it's one of the great things about the paleo community is it's so huge now that there are all these little like tiny offshoots, right? There's these shades of paleo. I'm quite fond of that term. I heard that from you for the first, you were the one who introduced me to that term. I'm giving you like,
sometimes, you know, I come up with clever things.
Did you, was that your thing you came up with?
It might've been Rob. I don't know.
Okay, we could give credit to Rob. I'm happy giving credit to you too. I don't think Rob listens to our show.
Sometimes you just forget these things because it's been years. So I certainly don't mean to take credit,
Rob,
for something.
My favorite phrase of Rob's, I'm just going to throw it out there because I think it's kind of relevant. Learn the difference between your mouth and a vacuum cleaner. That's one of my favorite Robisms.
My other favorite Robism is do not let perfection be the enemy of good.
Yeah. Oh, Rob, you're so insightful.
Incredibly.
Link to robwolf.com. yeah, so, I mean, I think that part of what I want to communicate to our listeners is that the most important thing is that you make the best choices for you. Or that I make the best choices for me. And that I make them, and each of us make them as often as realistically possible. And sometimes that means you let your kids eat the high fructose corn syrup ice cream. That was the best choice at the time with the situation. And it turned out that it was not so cool.
I will also caveat that by saying that I had also not made a very good choice earlier in the evening when I had had alcohol. And this definitely contributed to my lack of excellent decision-making.
So now the real story comes out, right, all of a sudden.
So
now
we get the story.
You were drunk as a skunk.
I mean,
we're like, whatever, eat it. I can totally picture it now.
You can see this, how this went terribly awry. Yes, I'm just, so this was also not a good decision that I made, which is another reason to not make terrible decisions.
But part of that is, right, this is a journey, right? You know, when people call it the paleo diet, we don't mean you go on it and lose 10 pounds to look great for a wedding, right? It's the way that we want to live for the rest of our lives. And that means finding balance. That means we're going to make mistakes. That means that sometimes we're going to choose the paleo donut. That means that sometimes, you know, we're going to go eat pizza. Like whatever that thing is, the most important thing is that we're making the healthiest choices as often as possible for the rest of our lives. And in order for paleo to be sustainable for most of us, I mean, some of us do really, really well with those rigid rules. I mean, clearly, you know, many people do really, really well with those rigid rules. But I think that the majority of people need to have some wiggle room to make this sustainable. And part of this journey is figuring out what your wiggle room is. Part of it is figuring out what is the thing that your body can tolerate versus the thing that's going to make you sit on the toilet for an hour and a half. And sometimes the way to figure that out is to make a mistake, and that's okay. And when you see these comments from people who are like, you're not paleo if you don't, right? Those statements are moronic. Let's like, it's just like, just pay attention to what you're doing yourself, right? Like it's just nobody's business what your individual choices are. And I think the most important thing is that you're using paleo as a template for evaluating what choices are the better choices. And that's what paleo is. It's guidance for how to make the best choices. It's not a strict set of rules. And it is improved by the fact that this movement is moving away from a strict set of rules and into a broader health education. Hashtag end soapbox.
Yes, that is the amazing, could not agree more. The only other thing that I can possibly add to that is that if people want more information on that, Chris Kresser's book is an excellent way to kind of learn how to build your own version, your own shade of paleo, your own way of living. And that would, you know, Sarah and I do not eat the same foods. We both have found things that work for us or do not work for us
like
in
raw
order
veggies.
What?
Like raw veggies.
Like raw veggies. And, you know, for example, I do fine on high quality dairy. And I'm not...
It gives me a migraine.
Right. I'm not eating it in mass quantities on a regular basis, but I do put heavy cream in my coffee and tea. Grass-fed organic heavy cream that has low heat pasteurization, because that's my prerogative and that's what doesn't bother me. But I'm just, you know, for people who are listening, like there are different things about paleo that make different people feel like only you are going to know how it affects your body. And for our family, coconut sugar doesn't bother us the way that if we eat something with cane sugar, I can see the result in my kids. We choose not to make foods with that often, but it is a food that until there is like definitive information that says it's a problem that I don't put on my ban list, but I pay attention to how I see my family, myself, our bodies react to the foods that we eat. And I listen to that just as much as I listen to, you know, the information that's out there that other people are recommending, because, you know, potatoes didn't suddenly become an approved food one day because somebody said, potatoes are paleo now. There was an entire movement of people that were talking about the different ways that potatoes were or were not a problem in their foods and the way that their bodies reacted to it. And
it became a huge community discussion.
It was a huge community.
About the pros and cons of potatoes.
But then
weighing the nutritive value versus the potentially inflammatory compounds in them.
But it was fascinating to me that when the Whole 30 cookbook came out, and it included potatoes, and therefore the program was amended like basically 2 weeks before that cookbook came out to say that potatoes were approved. Like the whole tangential world that had ever touched paleo was talking about potatoes are paleo now. And it was like, well, just that one person said they're paleo now, but there were like 10, you know, like maybe 100 people that had said in the paleo movement, leaders recommended whatever, who were saying it was fine before that. So I just would encourage people to think for themselves. And part of that is if you consume a food and it makes you feel good or not good, pay attention to that. And sugar is definitely one of those foods to really be attentive to how, you know, you, your family, your loved ones' bodies react to when you eat different kinds of sugars. And that's why my family now, when we make treats, try to focus on making things that are date sweetened whenever we can. If people go back through the blog and they look at recipes that we ourselves have made in the last 1 or 2 years, guest posts not included, like you'll see that we don't really have any recipes that I can think of that are just straight up like sweets. And it's because that's not, when we eat those foods, they're huge splurges and it's just not how we eat regularly.
Most of my recent, again, not including guest posts, like sweet recipes are like banana sweetened.
Yeah.
Like I've just gotten really far away from using, I used up all the evaporated cane juice and never got around to buying more. So I'm kind of stuck with bananas and dates for sweeteners.
I really, 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 really like, the Equal Exchange dark chocolate chips, which do have cane sugar in them. So that's probably like the one place that our family.
Sometimes
is still...
I'll use something like that as my
that is
chocolate
our
flavor and my sweetener,
yeah,
right?
Exactly.
Like that is you know, they're 72%, the bittersweet ones.
Yep.
And like that 28% is totally enough sweet for my entire batch of whatever I'm making.
Yep. Us too. So we'll put a link in the show notes to that. They're fair trade dark chocolate. And when it's not something that we can sweeten ourselves, that's what we're choosing to.
And they are soy free, aren't they?
Yeah, they're soy free, dairy free, nut free, like everything, I think.
Yeah,
so
they're everything free except for flavor.
Okay.
Just, I did not get paid to say that. I just want to let everyone know. Okay, so I'm going to throw this at you. We have a bunch of questions, and yet we have talked for a very, very long show so far.
Over an hour, yes.
What do you think about making this like a part one and part two, and we'll pick up from here next week? And what we'll do next week is we'll skip the science and we'll dive into the questions.
That sounds wonderful. And since our listeners can't tell us what they think, I'm going to give it.
We're going to assume everyone's
give it a green light.
Part two. Here we come. Yeah. That's what everyone's going to be like. There's more dorky hand gestures happening over here. This is a really good thing. We do audio only podcasts. Yeah. I'm just saying nobody needs to see how I gesticulate when I talk.
Not only am I an obnoxious hand talker who blushes at the slightest talk of anything, bodily fluid, but also I usually am looking like a train wreck when we record because it's late at night. So I also am really thankful that...
Well, then you'd have to make eye contact with me.
It would be so awkward.
And if you would like to see a video version of our podcast, please comment on iTunes and let us know.
No, don't do that.
If 100 people comment in iTunes saying they want a video podcast, I will talk Stacey into making that happen. I just challenged the listeners. Good thing we only have 6 listeners and that will never happen, right?
I hate to be the one to break it to you, but
if 100
we passed 6 listeners a long time ago. And I'm a little concerned that you might get that many comments. All right. Well, that was a great show, and I just told everybody that I fed my kids high fructose corn syrup and was drunk. So clearly we cannot give you the impression that we are perfectionists here, but I do just want to recap and encourage everyone to really, you know, pay attention and listen to their bodies and make good choices as often as you can. And just because I did that or my children did that, it doesn't mean that suddenly we're kicked out of the paleo club, because last time I checked, this was not a militant environment.
Paid membership.
Well, if it was a paid membership, then it wouldn't matter what I ate, right? I could just pay my money and then it would be fine.
This is true.
But it really, this whole lifestyle is really about finding what works for you and, you know, from that sustainable perspective, which Sarah and I talked about a lot in previous shows. Maybe Monica can link that up too, to kind of re-listen to that if it's something you're interested in. But cool. Well, thanks for the science. I think that's really helpful for people. And we'll be back next week to answer your questions, which if you
have any sugar-specific questions.
Yeah, now's the time.
Now's the time. We'll add them. If we can fit them all in. We'll do what we can. We'll do our best.
And I'm really thankful for the reprieve on what was going to be next week's discussion.
Right. Now, you don't have to talk about that.
I don't have to talk about it for.
But it's going to happen. Everyone, we're going to do a show on poop. And Stacey's going to handle it.
I just literally
she does want to call in sick.
Grabbed the edge of my chair and was like, please, can Matt do that show with you? I don't know why I'm such a baby about these things. It's ridiculous. I'm such a weirdo.
You know what, though? Here's the thing. You being a baby about these kinds of things is going to make it such an entertaining episode. It will be one of our most downloaded episodes. I'm telling you, people will love it. Plus, I'll bring some science and it's about time.
It's
cool. All I'm saying.
It's cool.
It's like such an important topic. Such an important health topic.
I'll be ready. It really is important, and I pay super close attention to my own digestion. I don't know why I find it private and don't want to talk about it, but I'm going to get over it.
That's your problem, I think.
Excellent. Well, it has been a very long show already, so we will just encourage you to not post on iTunes that you want to see us video, because That I just, yeah. So feel free to leave a review on iTunes and not leave a comment about video. That would be awesome.
I will be counting.
And we will be back next week to cover part two of our sugar topic and answer your questions. And I'm trying to think if there's any more announcements that we need to give people. Do you still have a book signing that you're doing with Predominantly Paleo? When is that?
I am. That is actually this weekend. So if you listen and you are in the Atlanta area, Jennifer Robbins from Predominantly Paleo and I are doing a book signing at the Buckhead Barnes & Noble on Saturday, the 29th. Am I remembering that? Yes. My calendar confirms it. August. Whew, it's the end of the show. I'd given up. I thought we were done and I was done talking. And now clearly I cannot talk. We are doing a book signing Saturday, August 29th at the Buckhead Barnes & Noble at 12:30. And please come on out and meet us. And Jennifer's book is amazing, Down South Paleo. It's wonderful. You're going to want to get a copy. And then I'll just be a dork for everybody. So it'll be fun.
Awesome.
Thank you for listening to The Paleo View. If you enjoyed the show, please take a moment to rate us on iTunes. You can also support us by shopping for our favorite paleo products on the sidebars of our individual websites or by donating through PayPal.
Howdy doodly.
It's so awkward that you say that.
Why? Because it makes me sound as old as I actually am?
I guess. No, it makes you sound 20 years older.
But The Simpsons didn't exist.
Oh my gosh, is that a Simpsons thing?
For 60-year-olds?
Do you want to know something interesting about me? And kudos to all the people listening to the bloopers to learn this factoid.
Yes. Have you never watched The Simpsons?
So I boycott things that are popular. Have I told you this already?
No.
So like,
have we been podcasting? Wait. You do not, you liar.
Listen, I'm gonna tell you, like, what happens. So, like, I told you I didn't see Star Wars until, like, Cole was, I think, 4 years old. And Matt informed me that I needed to watch it because I was like, anything that is super crazy popular in pop culture just kind of turns me off. I don't know why. Like, and it's selective because there are some things that are popular in pop culture that I totally clasp onto. But another thing that, like, I refused to watch was the Titanic, like, because everybody loved it and raved about it and saw it in the theater.
I saw it three times in the movie theaters.
You were the reason that I did not. Because
it was the first movie I ever saw more than once in the theaters, and I saw it three times.
So I did.
I was like the demographic for that movie when it came out, though.
So was I. Well, anyway, so
you
ended up,
you were younger.
I ended up seeing it like
in high school or something, probably still.
Yeah. When I ended up seeing it 10 years later, like, I end up eventually seeing these things. And also, not only do I boycott The Simpsons because they were popular, but I also don't watch adult cartoons. Like, I just think that it's ridiculous. Like,
I don't anymore. I mean, like, I watched The Simpsons until they got really weird, like, 7 or 8 years ago.
But, like, okay, so I know that South Park is funny. Like, I know that, period. Okay?
Okay.
I refuse to watch it because it's an adult cartoon. Like, I just can't.
I watched it when I was, like, in, I'm going to use an American term here, in college. And then, I don't know, I didn't like staying up late, so I didn't watch it. And it was, like, in the olden days when they had VCRs. I don't know if you remember back then.
What?
Because you're so young compared to me.
No, I've never even heard of that before.
Yeah, weird. So you do not boycott all cool things because you do things like watch Game of Thrones and Orange is the New Black and Walking Dead and, like, all the cool shows that all the people are watching.
I feel like if I get in
– So you have more exceptions than you have, like, examples.
I do. You're right.
So you're really a liar. You really just never watch The Simpsons or South Park is what you're saying. You just never watch cartoons. You have a thing against cartoons would be a more accurate statement. I'm just saying.
It's not. Because I like children's cartoons. I just feel like adult cartoons are ridiculous.
What's your favorite
out loud.
Children's cartoon? Just, you know.
Toy Story 3 made me cry a lot.
Have you seen Inside Out yet?
No, I'm boycotting it.
No, you, so, so it's a completely different movie for parents than it is for kids. And you will cry and cry and cry and cry. But boycotting Pixar movies is like boycotting fun.
I guess. I'm just really weird. Matt has like just come to terms with it over.
Campaigning again.
It's like this decade and a half. He'll just kind of shake his head and rub his face whenever I'm like, I don't want to see that. Because he knows that it's just me like being weird. And that means that he has to see it by himself or wait 10 years. But like, because we
didn't. Those two options.
Yeah, because we didn't like get in on the ground on it as being like something that people liked. I just decide, no, people are saying it's good. That means it's ridiculous. I'm not going to do it. I don't, it's like, as I say those words out of my mouth, I know that they're ridiculous, but it is just what it is. But when we started watching Dent and when we started watching Game of Thrones, like we knew they were going to be great. We were anticipating the release. Like tonight is the like season premiere of the like offshoot of the Walking Dead show. And we've been following along for months about that. Matt knows all about it before it even premieres. Like, me and everybody across the country is going to watch a show tonight, and I'm totally fine with that. But if we missed this premiere, if we didn't know anything about it, and then, like, 2 months from now, someone was like, oh my gosh, have you seen this new show? It's amazing. I'd be like, I'm not watching that.